Thank you. I'm Kathleen Thomas. I'm at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill at the Shep Center for Health Services Research. And this work was done by a large team of us at Sheps and Vanderbilt and University of Sydney in Australia also. And what I'm going to talk about is determining stakeholder priorities for future research in the treatment of childhood autism. So in this project requires us to kind of shift our vision to trying to understand what our particular stakeholder community is interested in terms of investment by PCORI and other funders going forward in research. And it's not nearly so much about their personal health services research. And in fact, our IRB deemed that this was not human subjects research, which is just different. Okay, and as I said, this is funded by the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute, PCORI, and we have no relationships to disclose. So, thinking about future research in autism, we felt like there's really a need for prioritizing. A recent Academy Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality funded systematic review of evidence around the treatments for childhood autism identified significant knowledge gaps. Autism stakeholders are interested in a broad array of treatments and research topics, and they have shown that there's a lot of burden involved with consuming all those services and trying to figure out what's right for their kids. And also the stakeholder community has divergent opinions about what treatment approaches work and what are desirable outcomes. So we felt like autism was a ripe kind of community for learning better how to prioritize future research. We started with the AHRQ evidence-based practice center's comparative effectiveness review around these treatments. And the challenge for us is that normally when the evidence-based practice centers do a comparative effectiveness review, they articulate all the evidence base that exists, and they pinpoint certain knowledge gaps that need to be filled. But for autism, the reality is that the review identified a huge range of knowledge gap and a tiny bit of evidence base. So that's what we had to start with. The evidence-based practice centers, during their reviews, tend to end this systematic review by hosting a set of thought leaders around the issue to prioritize where the field should go next by means of a kind of simple ranking exercise. And people have a couple of webinars or sit in a room together and come up with this kind of ranking. An alternative approach that we wanted to explore is called discrete choice experiments, and they've been used a lot in the UK to model community preferences for health policies, as well as individual preferences for treatment options. But they haven't been used for prioritization exercises, and more to the point, the relative advantages of these methods for capturing stakeholder inputs into the knowledge development process is really unexplored. And so that was our objective here. So what we know from the get-go is that there are potential advantages to each method. When you do this ranking with stars is just the method that's used, it's easy to understand. People understand what we're asking of them. It facilitates reduction of the choice set, so it's easy to say, okay, little group, tell me your top two, or tell me your top five, and then amongst the top five, tell me your top two. It's a very quick way to reduce a cumbersome number of choices, and it's fairly easy to converge on the group priorities. But the weaknesses of a ranking exercise is that it can also lead to polarization of priorities. You may find that it's hard to get consensus, or that you have very opinionated people who are driving it in different directions, and it allows an opinionated few people perhaps to drive the process more by putting heavy weight, lots of stars on a particular choice, and that may be good or that may be bad. It's something we wanted to focus in on. And also, the priorities that you get from this ranking exercise are tied to a static set of research needs. So you can ask people to rank a given set of knowledge gaps, but that doesn't convey to the future in any sense. Okay, with discrete choice, best worst scaling examples, the strengths are is that it kind of narrows the cognitive task to something that's easy to understand. It also limits gaming strategies so that you can't look at this task and say, oh, I'm going to ignore part of this and just focus on what I think is important. It kind of encourages people to give you the full landscape of their values. And what I think is particularly cool about it is that it elucidates what people value in future research so that you can use that knowledge going forward as the field changes. The weaknesses are that the mapping preferences about research needs from kind of the underlying values is an imprecise process. So there are pros and cons to each. So our research objectives in our project are to describe the process and challenges of constructing these discrete choice experiments in future research, and to compare the findings from the discrete choice experiments and the ranking exercises for stakeholder priorities about future research in autism. And I should say that in Chapel Hill, we're the seat of the development of one of the major approaches to treatment in autism. It's very popular, and so we're fortunate to be immersed in this autism stakeholder community, which really supports this work for us. So what I'm going to talk about today is really our instrument development, and we've moved all the way to doing a small pilot, but you'll see what I'm focusing on is what we've learned in the process of putting our instruments together and our early feedback from people about how it works for them, and I'm not focusing as much on the particular findings so far because it's too soon. So first what we did is we extracted future research needs from the systematic review of evidence on the treatment of childhood autism, and we call these the knowledge gaps. And because there's so much gappiness around autism, that was a pretty extensive process where the typical extraction process gave us, I don't know, 70 gaps, and we felt like that wasn't useful or feasible and was way too awkward. So we went through this process of collapsing them to a one-page list that was distinct and kind of meaningful to a broad array of stakeholders, we hoped. Then we also synthesized from the literature stakeholder values about future research. And these are called the choice attributes. So these are the characteristics of these knowledge gaps that people look at when they make decisions about whether they would value investment in a knowledge gap. And we took these from things like advocacy, community mission statements, NIH, has an interagency autism coordinating committee, and we took that from their mission statement. So we started with these lists, and then we ran a series of focus groups to get people's reaction to them. And we had, we held groups with different kinds of stakeholders because we felt that people might be more comfortable talking to one another if they were the same kind of people to start with. And we held two groups, a pair of groups for each type of stakeholder, where we just talked about what knowledge gaps are and listen for the kind of underlying value statements that people were talking about. And then we came back a second time and we showed them this list of attributes augmented with the issues that they had raised and also the knowledge gaps, and talked about whether this articulated well their kind of thinking around knowledge gaps. And we did this with a group of adults with autism, parents and other family members, and providers and researchers. And it was, doing these groups was really fascinating. People were really excited about this process and having the opportunity to have input into guiding future research directions. And they all were quite comfortable talking about knowledge gaps and what they valued in future research. And we were concerned going into this that people would say, well, we want a cure. Bye. and that wasn't the case at all. In fact, the adults were particularly insightful and saying, no, I don't want a cure. I want to learn how to be me and live in a healthful, full way. And I would, if someone said, well, I do have a nephew with autism who's very impaired, and I wish for him that he didn't have to face this. But they very quickly moved us away from cure, which was really interesting to see. So we have audiotaped those focus groups, and we're in the process of transcribing them. There's really, interestingly, a big call in the literature for careful description of the development, process and development of discrete choice experiments. And so we feel like just describing this and the different input that people have is an important piece to support that kind of methods development. And so then we ran our first pilot of this interview in a small group of stakeholders where there was a variety of stakeholders. And this, we wanted a variety of stakeholders because it mirrors the AHRQ small group process. And we wanted to see what it was like to have people talking about their values and perhaps differing opinions when there were different kinds of people in the room. So from our refined list, these are just some examples of knowledge gaps in treatment development. We need to collect evidence on integrated treatment approaches in which multiple treatments are combined in a comprehensive manner. This is a knowledge gap that was really contributed and refined by our focus groups and not part of our original list. We need to collect evidence on behavioral interventions. That's straight from the systematic review. We need evidence on allied health interventions, such as physical, occupational, or speech therapy. This is also straight from the review. There's a ton of service use in these areas, but there's not a lot of evidence about their impact. Here's some examples of knowledge gaps about modifiers and methods. Let me say that we were concerned as a group that our stakeholders, except for the researchers, would not want to talk about modifiers and methods, and that they would say, we need new behavioral treatments, or we need new complementary and alternative treatments, and not want to talk about methods. But actually, all the stakeholders were really engaged in talking about modifiers and methods, all of them. And so that's really interesting to us. And some of these are collect evidence on which child, family, and intervention characteristics lead to the best or worst outcomes. Collect evidence on short-term treatment outcomes that predict how a child will function in the long run, for example, in terms of life skills. That's something that was part of the review, but also really emphasized by our adults and parents. Create a core set of child and family outcomes and standard ways to measure them, and create standard ways to describe children with autism who are part of a research study. So part of the challenge in autism interventions is that we just don't know how to describe what we're starting from. And that's a key research gap. Okay, so this is the final, and this is in the final list of attributes of research. In order to construct the best worst scaling experiments, we take each of these attributes and describe it in terms of whether it's kind of high or low. So, for example, the proportion of children affected with autism affected by the research is an attribute or feature of a knowledge gap that could be addressed. And in addressing that knowledge gap, it might do it might develop treatments that touch a large proportion of children with autism or a very small, narrow proportion of children with autism. The cost of the research could be high or could be low. The age of the children who would benefit from the treatment might be, the treatment might be focused on older kids, say 11 or older, or younger kids. The focus of the treatment might be just on the child with autism, or it could be on the broader, the child plus their broader support environment. And our adults really talked about the importance of thinking about the whole group is a treatment target. The out-of-pocket cost of the treatment to families week by week could be high or low. The ability of the treatment to address disorders that often go along with autism, all those co-occurring disorders, could be high or low. The ability of the treatment to address multiple aspects of autism, so autism has different symptomology and different challenges, whether it's going to focus on one single problem behavior or to try and address a broader range of functioning. The strategy of the treatment is to build on the strengths of the child or to focus on problem behaviors. And the ability of the treatment to improve life skills, long-term functional skills, is high or low. So next I'm going to show you two examples of these questions. This is an example of the ranking with stars exercise. And we just ask people, please rank the features of future research in autism by placing stars. And we only give them a certain number of stars, and they can place up to 4 stars per attribute there. And so it gives us a sense of how they rank it. It also allows them to put a weight on their ranking. So you can put up to 4 stars in one place and show us that one thing is most important to you. Or you can say, oh, there are 6 things that are kind of equally important to me. This is an example of the best worst scaling exercise. In this, we present people with a research scenario, and we say, what's your most favorite and least favorite thing about this research? And in this example, this research is, well, if we go down this path and invest in this particular proposal, few children with autism will be affected by the knowledge gained. The treatment focuses only on the child with autism. The out-of-pocket cost of the treatment will be low. The treatment addresses multiple aspects of autism, and it focuses on improving symptoms rather than life skills. And then you say, well, okay, what's my favorite thing? Well, maybe my favorite thing is that out-of-pocket treatment is low, or maybe that it addresses multiple aspects of autism. And my least favorite thing about this might be, well, really it only is going to touch a few children. So I think it's important for future research to touch a broad array of children. And we present them with a whole random design of these scenarios, and it gives us feedback about the relative importance of each of these features, and I've got to keep going. Okay, so from our pilot, our top 3 attributes that we identify are the ability of the treatment to address multiple aspects of autism, the proportion of the kids affected, and the ability to improve life skills, and the bottom attribute roughly was the cost of the research. This just shows, it compares our outcomes so far between the STAR activity and the best worst scaling. And I think the takeaway here is that the lowest, there's some convergence around the lowest ranked things and the highest ranked things, and it's kind of messy in between. And this picture shows the point I made earlier about how the STARing activity allows you to put weight on your preference. And it just shows that overall, the more people who endorse something, the higher rank it got. But even in places where only two people endorsed it, it could get a heavier rank because they're putting more stars on it. So our preliminary findings are, in terms of the gaps, which is ultimately where we want to get with this, are that we need to collect evidence on integrated treatment approaches, behavioral interventions, modifiers, treatment modifiers, and how changes in one areas of a child's life affect changes in other areas. And the bottom gap turned out to be evidence on dietary interventions, interestingly. So to conclude, what we're seeing from this process is that the ranking with stars allows you to cast either a wide range of votes or give some choices heavy weight, and we can see both. From that, we can see both this sort of breadth of preference and weight. The best worst scaling prevents you from putting all your stars in one bucket. It kind of makes you show us your full ranking. So it raises new questions for us. What are the dimensions of agreement or disagreement, polarization or consensus? We can have weight or width. You know, is it? Do we see that a few people really care, or that everyone sort of is like, yeah, that's good enough? And what makes a best method? Should it be most understandable? Should it conceive? Could it achieve convergence with other methods? And then ultimately, who decides what's the best method? And that's it. Thank you.